Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I completely forgot that I was going to do kind of a round robin or a roundup after we finished all the ratification debates. And doggone it, forgive me. I got poked in the side by Kenny B, and I can only say thank you for reminding me. There are lots of issues that we still need to go through, but I did want to do a compendious summation of the extracts that we have gone through regarding the ratification debates. Now, I do know that there are, as much as I try to avoid the news and as much as I try to avoid listening to idiots like Biden and Booker and the rest of the socialist pigs that are out there, I do get very concerned when I hear all of these idiots labeling Trump and Trump supporters as white nationalists and white supremacists. I mean, the rancor and the hyperbolic language and rhetoric is uncalled for. Now, I do get it that this is just the freedom of expression. This goes to the wiring of the left versus the right. If you understand the scale of liberty, on one extreme side is full liberty, where an individual has the free agency to do anything and everything they want to. However, there are laws of morality, there are laws of justice, and so forth that society has implemented, and you will be shamed. And your honor means something to you. You are a person of character. And if you do the wrong thing, you will be held accountable and you will be responsible for your actions. That is the true extreme side of liberty, where all people are fully accountable for what they do, but they are free to do what they choose. They have to accept and live with the consequences. They lose their family, they lose their kids, they damage their health, and they lose a lung, they lose a kidney. That is it. You don't make a plea to say, please save my kidney. Especially when there are other people that are in need of a kidney that have not done it, aren't in that line because of their reckless behavior. A good example of that's like David Crosby, how he polluted his body for years and years and years. And then because he had the money, he was able to get himself in line to be able to get new kidneys, livers, whatever it was he had to have a transplant for. That's what the immoral society of China is for, to help serve those people who are willing to kill others so that they can continue to live their riotous behavior. But those who live in the side of liberty believe everybody must make their own choices for themselves. You cannot be compelled, you cannot be forced to not live or play well with others or what have you. You have to learn, and you have, all things being equal, for those on the side of liberty believe that education and enlightenment brings everybody to the same table. Now, on the other extreme of the poles of liberty is what we call enslavement, where people don't have a choice. They are forced to live a life that is dictated to them because somebody is smarter than them and they already know you don't need this, you don't need that, and this is how you're going to live. The means of getting from liberty to enslavement is a very evil process, and the progressives who are working to enslave you whether that is taking away your liberty of your right to bear arms and protecting yourself from a tyrannical government, or whether that is your right for having to not pay for the consequences, the bad decisions and consequences of those bad decisions by others, whether that be an unwanted pregnancy, whether that be the destruction of their liver, whatever it is, you should not be held responsible. Now, it's one thing for you to be compassionate and to give to them, to help them. But hopefully that's what you're trying to do, is to help them become enlightened and come to the side of liberty. But I am telling you that the wiring in the heads of these people on the extreme left, the subjugationists, they don't care. They will do what is ever necessary to actually get you into the side and into the position that they want you to be. They will force you. They will kill you, just as an example, so that others will comply. You have to understand their modus operandi is the ends justify the means. And that's why every time they talk about, well, we need a compromise, we need to have good, you know, they call it an open, honest conversation so that we can all compromise on good gun control. No, we don't need gun control. What we need is morals in this country. What we need is enlightenment. What we need is to restore what American principles were, instead of allowing these subjugationists and these communists in obfuscating the truth and in blurring the reality. Because the reason we are so messed up as a society is because we have become a godless society. And that's exactly where they knew going down this path. There are consequences to this. There are consequences to removing religion, removing these types of ideas. This is not about white supremacy. This is about what makes America great and what is making America bad. What is causing all these problems? And it comes right down to the fact that our education system is educating kids on godless secularism. We talk about this all the time. The reason why homelessness and drug addiction and all these problems are trying to solve this emptiness, this spiritual emptiness throughout America. And it's really easy. Just bring back the morals. Put the Bible and prayer back into school. I don't know anybody that died from a prayer. Not from the words being said. Maybe somebody died during a prayer because they were praying, you know, like in Texas. Maybe those people were killed, you know, at the point of prayer, but they didn't die from the prayer. I don't know anybody that has been harmed by actually trying to develop an individual relationship with their Savior and so forth. I mean, that just it boggles my mind to think those types of things. But I can tell you, people are harmed all the time when you allow them to play these ruthless, bloody games, when you dehumanize people, when you desensitize them to the essence of life, to morality, to the fundamental rights and wrongs. You know, a child, even a child at the youngest age gets it, and they understand it at a very base, fundamental level of mine. When a child understands that this is theirs, then they start understanding mine, my property. They grasp property, that this is mine. And when you take it from them, they're going to cry because they know you have taken their property. And so, which actually reminds me, it's almost time to revisit Madison's essay on property. That is one of the most powerful views of property one can even look at. But I'm almost out of time, and I can't believe it. I just want you to know this one thing, that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org, and our listen line is 605-562-4209. So if you cannot stream this show, fill up our phone banks by dialing 605-562-4209. I was just told by a family member that they were driving down the road and they came to a stop and somebody was listening and they go, are you being aired in this area? And I go, no, either the person is using the Red State Talk Radio app or they are using the direct dial line. And they go, oh, so I didn't know you had this direct dial line. Well, you don't listen to my show. And then I shame them, but that's okay. And so what we're going to do, and we're heading into a heartbreak, but what we want to do today is we want to do this compendious summation before I get back into the Need to Know News from G. Edward Griffin. So that way you can actually, you know, kind of close the books on, wow, these, you know, some of the things that are pointed out, and they may be redundant. And some of these are, I don't want to call them an outlier, but they are rare glimpses of how this Constitution was sold. And you need to understand this. And the reason why is because if you understand how it was sold, then you can understand how it can only be operated. And we will get into that when we come back from the hard break. But I will also tell you that we do need your help. And if you send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, we will help you get involved so that you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. We will talk about Red State Coffee when we come back and other ways you can help us. And then we will do a compendious summation and then dive into the remaining tidbits of Need to Know News from G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News. So we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
I gotta say, I'm kind of waiting for that time when it comes when they have Biden talking, and I think Biden might be the guy that will actually run against Trump. If that happens, then I think that's a huge gift, and I think that will almost guarantee Trump's reelection, because Biden, he may have some interesting talking points, but when it comes down to the dynamics of a debate and those types of things, he may be able to have a really good speech writer.
but he cannot hide the truth. And so I can't wait until things move forward, because what I want you to start doing is I want you to start creating your own memes that basically say this: hey, Joe, Obama lied, he must be tried. And start that as a chant. I would love to see that chant start resonating as they move past the nomination. I don't want to risk, because there's no doubt in my mind, the person that has the best shot of just falling on their face and failing to even muster the numbers would be Biden, because Biden is the antithesis of the extreme left. The extreme left has no reverence towards age and wisdom, even though Biden doesn't have any age. He has plenty of age. He just doesn't have any wisdom. But my point is that if we're quiet and we let the Democrats just go through and mull through instead of criticizing them, you know, maybe even encouraging them to go, hey, you know, Biden, that was a pretty good talk. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, nod, nod. Yeah. And, you know, help them kind of settle on Biden as their choice. And then moving forward from next year, early next year, because when is the convention? I think it's like March. So they're going to be selecting their candidate very early so that they have 6 full months to spend billions of dollars on presidential campaign crap, right? So anyway, let me plow forward here. I also want to let you know that if you want to get directly involved in supporting us, one great way to do that, and if you love coffee, this is how you can put two things you love to do, listen to and learn from Reclaiming the Republic right here from your humble host, G.R. Mobley. And you can support this host by listening to and drinking your Red State Coffee. So if you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and click on that link for Red State Coffee, there you go. Get your coffee on, get your Joe on, and you can get going with some Red State talk on Reclaiming the Republic. Another way you can get involved financially, at least helping us directly, would be our crowdfunding on GoFundMe. So please, by all means, we need your help. But like I was saying before the break, what we really need is you to get involved. We want you to become a part of the solution. Send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. That way you can actually become a contributor and a leader in your local area. Now, so let me get into the Massachusetts debates first. Now, we started off with Massachusetts. And I think the biggest highlight out of this one debate was the fact that Congress can make no laws that will oppress the people which will not equally involve themselves in the oppression. Now, this was stated by Mr. Stillman. Mr. Stillman came right out and said, and he was defining, supporting the Constitution and defining the fact that they could not do this. Well, it may not be written anywhere in the Constitution, but if it was written down into the debates as a definition and a standard in limiting Congress from being able to hide from their own oppressive laws, well, there you go, friends. You now have a nugget of gold to go after them and sue your congressman. You can sue Congress for passing any law that does not apply to them because it is denied by this definition in the Massachusetts debate. They cannot do that unless they amend the Constitution, and there is no amendment in the Constitution allowing them to bypass their own oppressive laws. Isn't that beautiful? The other thing was a comment made by Samuel Adams, and he was basically talking about John Hancock and his recommendation that they pursue a Bill of Rights and make some amendments. And so this is what Samuel Adams said. He says, "Your Excellency's first proposition is that it be expressly declared that all powers not expressly delegated to Congress are reserved to the several states to be by them exercised, This appears to my mind to be a summary of a Bill of Rights which gentlemen are anxious to obtain. It removes a doubt which many have entertained respecting the matter, and gives assurance that if any law made by the federal government shall be extended beyond the power granted by the proposed Constitution, and inconsistent with the Constitution of this state, it will be an error and adjudged by the courts of law to be void. Period. There you go. And so, obviously, this was, I don't want to say duplicative, but this was the common theme. This is one of the things that was common and resonated in every single state ratification debates. Okay? I mean, there was a huge level of consistency in these things. Now, another debate, and I could go on and on and on and on and on, but one of the things I want to highlight, because it was Mr. Wilson that kind of talks about, and this goes into the understanding of sovereignty. Who are the sovereigns? And right here he says, I agree with the members in opposition. There cannot be two sovereign powers on the same subject. And then he goes into this explanation that he looks and considers the United States as one community, and he looks at the people of the different states as different communities, and within the states, lesser scales of communities. And the powers that are delegated to the federal government are much different than the powers delegated to the states, because the federal government has external objects that they are delegated powers to, such as trade, war, and those types of things. And to the states, it's the domestic things for the domestic tranquility of the states and for their local communities, for the needs and necessities of stop signs or what have you. And he doesn't say that, but bottom line, he articulates a very common theme. There is, by the way, and I'll say this time and time again, there is zero evidence in any of these debates that the concept of a living document, that the concept of interpretation by the courts to make new laws or to reach into the Constitution and interpret what they believe is necessary for the new direction or new issues that the framers failed to identify. And I'm here to tell you that there is nothing in these debates that even attest to that or even account for that. So let's go to North Carolina. North Carolina, I love these debates, and this is Governor Johnston, and he says this, the Congress cannot assume any other powers than those expressly given them without a palpable violation of the Constitution. So what he is saying right here is basically and this was a definition provided by several different Federalists. But what he is saying, actually, it contradicts the need for a Bill of Rights that John Hancock was calling for, but it comes right out and says you don't need a Bill of Rights because Congress cannot assume any other powers than those expressly given them without a palpable violation of the Constitution. Pretty clear and simple, if you ask me. Now, the next thing, and this is my favorite, and so this is a little bit longer. It's probably one of my longest citations that we have here. And so it starts off with Mr. Iredell, and he says, did any man ever hear before that at the end of a power of attorney, it was said that the attorney should not exercise more power than there were given him? Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anson and Caswell, and he should give another power of attorney to sell his lands in Anson. Would the other have any authority to sell the lands in Caswell? Or could he, without absurdity, say, 'Tis true you did not expressly authorize me to sell the lands in Caswell, but as you had lands there and did not say I should not, I thought I might as well sell those lands as the other.' If you understand a power of attorney, you are limited to what is in that power of attorney. And so what he is arguing right here is that what powers are enumerated within this Constitution are the defined limits they cannot assume anything else. And so there's no point in putting anything to say you can do anything and everything you want unless you want to just give somebody a general power of attorney to do whatever they feel necessary for you, for your benefit. Now, I will go on when we come back because I see we're just seconds away from another break. So we're going to pick up the last part of what he says regarding this power of attorney and this concept for a Bill of Rights, because he is setting up the argument with the fact that you do not need restrictions when you only delegate of certain powers. And so, as you can tell, there's that music. We're going to be cutting out and going to a break. But when we come back, we will close up with Mr. Iredell and a few other comments from North Carolina, go into Virginia, finish up Virginia, and get into these need-to-know news things and segments and bites and bits. So we will be right back after this. Thank you so much, folks. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so Mr. Iredell is struggling, like many other Federalists, in this concept that we needed a Bill of Rights. But what's really important that you take away from this and all of these other conversations is the fact that the Constitution is enumerated. So we have a Bill of Rights. That doesn't mean that we opened up a door in allowing the federal government to do anything and everything else that we don't have in a Bill of Rights, because we still have an enumerated Constitution. The whole point was for the Bill of Rights to ensure that they didn't even come close to stepping on any of these other protected and important rights, such as the right to bear arms. So what Mr. Iredell says, now that he talks about the power of attorney, is he says this: a Bill of Rights, as I conceived, would not only be incongruous, but dangerous. No man, let his integrity be what it will, could enumerate all the individual rights not relinquished by this Constitution. Suppose, therefore, an enumeration of a great many, but an omission of some, and that long after all traces of our present disputes were at an end, any of the omitted rights should be invaded and the invasion be complained of, what would be the plausible answer of the government to such a complaint? would they not naturally say, we live at a great distance from the time when this Constitution was established. We can judge of it much better by the ideas of it entertained at the time than by any ideas of our own. The Bill of Rights passed at the time showed the people did not think every power retained which was not given. Else, this Bill of Rights was not only useless but absurd. But we are not at liberty to change an absurdity upon our ancestors, or to charge absurdity upon our ancestors, who have given such strong proofs of their good sense as well as their attachment to liberty, so long as the rights enumerated in the Bill of Rights remain unviolated, you have no reason to complain. This is not one of them. Thus, a Bill of Rights might operate as a snare rather than a protection if we had formed a general legislature. With undefined powers, a Bill of Rights would not only have been proper, but necessary. And it would have then operated as an exception to the legislative authority in such particulars. It has this effect in respect to some of the American constitutions, where the power of legislation are general, but where they are powers of a particular nature and expressly defined, as in the case of the Constitution before us. I think for the reason I have given, a Bill of Rights is not only unnecessary, but it would be absurd and dangerous. So keep in mind, friends, this is GR talking. Keep in mind that even though we have a Bill of Rights, it did not change or open up and make the Constitution a general constitution. It is still an enumerated constitution, and these are the only powers that the federal government has. And, oh, by the way, even if they think they can get outside of this box, here is a list of powers within the Bill of Rights that they cannot trample on. Now, the only reason the Bill of Rights became profound in American life is because of the Civil War. The Bill of Rights became applied to the states to ensure that the states could not use laws that would restrict freemen, the blacks that were freed, from being able to bear arms, from being able to assemble, to being able to religiously express themselves, to speak their conscience, to have protections from unnecessary and, or I should say, illegal search and seizure and so forth. That was the only brilliant thing that came from the fact that we had a Bill of Rights, because the federal government was still limited. What ended up happening after the Civil War by the 14th Amendment, Section 1, no state can then pass any laws that actually restrict a individual privilege or an individual immunity guaranteed by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. I believe that was the only reason why that the Bill of Rights actually moved forward the way they did and the way Madison had done it, was to truly protect the freemen down the road. And I don't think Madison did it to do that. This, again, lends to this whole concept that GR has been telling you, that the framers all admitted that the divine hand of providence inspired them into saying and doing what they needed to do. Now, this is Mr. Iredell again, and he's going down this same path, and he says, and this is a different citation, but he says, if the Congress should claim any power not given them, it would be as bare a usurpation as making a king in America. If this Constitution be adopted, it must be presumed the instrument will be in the hands of every man in America to see whether authority be usurped, and any person, by inspecting it, may see if the power claimed be enumerated. If it be not, he will know it be a usurpation. So I'm asking you, my friends, is the power of environmental protection within the Constitution? Is the power of education within the Constitution for the federal government to delegate, to tax, to have any finger in these pies? Energy, housing, agriculture, labor. My friends, we are being ramrodded with all sorts of tyranny. Now, if you go through the rancor and the rhetoric, as you hear in the news and the news cycle by the leftists, this may make me, because I'm supporting the Constitution, a white supremacist. Anyway, there was another pretty interesting quote regarding kings and or the types of people that could become presidents of the United States, but I will let that go. The final ratification debate that we want to go through, and the final citations that we kind of want to start off with, well, it was, of course, it starts with Madison, and there's no more concise, I would say, citation than this. The powers of the federal government are enumerated. It can only operate in certain cases. It has legislative powers on defined and limited objects beyond which it cannot extend its jurisdiction. My friends, these are all same words. Massachusetts, the same words in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Virginia. What is it going to take to get you to realize that they are doing anything they want to? Next up, it's going to be the Department of Babysitting. And it may sound absurd, but I am here to tell you that they're going to try to invade your family and your home, and they will do so however they feel necessary and proper, because they do not feel any limitations within this Constitution and its framework, if you understand what I'm saying. Now, one of the things that Mr. Nicholas said, he said, "But sir, this Constitution is defective because the common law is not declared to be in force. What would it have been the consequences if it had?" I'm here to tell you, anybody that tells you the common law is an edict from the Constitution, if your state wants to change its law, it can. How it does that and how it maintains its laws and moving from one to another, that's up to you and your state. The Constitution does not dictate how you must, you know, process your laws and your court processes and so forth. The only thing that is protected is the fact that you can you must have an opportunity of a trial by jury. And so the other thing is that the federal government, right here, as Mr. Nicholas says, they cannot define or prescribe the punishment of any other crime whatever without violating the Constitution. Now, remember that the only laws that they have the ability to prescribe punishment and the crime itself is treason, counterfeiting, and laws committed against laws of nations or crimes committed against the laws of nations, and which is outside the United States, and also laws that are violated on the high sea, treason, and I should say misdemeanors and felonies and misdemeanors on the high seas. So any high crimes on the high seas that you want to commit, then they have the ability to punish you for those. And so the next thing that I want to point out, and this one here is Mr. Nicholas as well, Congress to make such laws as to be necessary to enable them to pay the public debts and provide for the common defense, that this general welfare was united not to the general power of legislation, but to the particular power of laying and collecting taxes, imposts, and excises for the purpose of paying the debts and providing for the common defense. That is, they could only raise as much money as would pay the debts and provide for the common defense and the consequences of this power. That's it. They cannot tax you, excise, or whatsoever for housing, agriculture, labor, environment, all of these things. They cannot do it, but they're doing it. So what are we going to do? When we come back, we will summarize this and get into the need-to-know news. Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so there are lots of really good nuggets, but what I want to get into is some of the suppressions and the one thing that Madison kind of gets into. And let me see here. This is a quote by Madison, and this is regarding martial law. Why is this very, very, very important? Because if you understand martial law is where they put aside the habeas corpus and the writ of habeas corpus and the standard effects of your common law. And what they do is it basically the military can take over. If they say they don't want you out on the street, you can't be out on the street. If they tell you that you can only conduct business during a certain time, they take over for public safety purposes because we're at war. And so this is what Madison says. The honorable member, which he's talking about, George Mason, is under another mistake. He wishes martial law to be exercised only in the time of war, under an idea that Congress can establish it at any time in peace. The states are to have the authority of training the militia according to the congressional discipline and the governing them at all times. When not in the service of the Union, Congress is to govern such part of them as may be employed in the actual service of the United States, and such part only can be subject to martial law. In other words, for martial law to be declared in America, it can only be declared where the militia is being deployed and in use. Period. There cannot be a nationwide martial law. And there's lots of people that spread these falsehoods regarding, oh, well, Lincoln did it. And do you know we're still technically under martial law? No. We have never been under martial law because they never had deployed the militia. They did it for a couple of months, but when they failed or when they withdrew the militia and decided to completely violate the Constitution and declare martial law, it was all unconstitutional. So anything and everything that they have done since then has been egregious violations of the Constitution. And I know you're very bright. I have a very bright audience. You get this. You have to start helping others understand this. They need to understand that this whole thing that we're fighting, this whole thing that we're dealing with, is a house of cards. It's that clear. It's that simple. It's all been predicated upon one violation of the Constitution after another violation after another violation, and they're making it up as they go along. Just like, you know, Monty Python, or just as, you know, you see kids playing. That's exactly what's happening. They are making all of this up as they go along. And so one of the last things that I want to say is a little quote by Mr. Lee of Westmoreland. But he says, "The creature destroys the creator. How has he proved this? By his bare assertion, by ascribing an infinitude to powers clearly limited and defined for certain designated purposes. I shall not repeat the arguments which have fully refuted this idea of the general of this honorable gentleman. The point is that we can no longer allow them to just make these off-the-wall assertions that we can do this and we can do this. If it isn't in the Constitution, they can't do it. Period. It's pretty simple, my friends. Let me see. Is there one other thing that really something I want to kind of jump out and say, okay, here we go. This is something that's really important. And I think there probably is. There's just so many things. Okay. One of the last things that I'll say, and this is by Mr. Madison, and he says this, and this is in the red. Okay, so this is what he says. But had the government been completely consolidated, the Senate would have been chosen by the people in their individual capacity in the manner as the members of the other house. Thus, it is a complicated nature, and this complication I can trust will be found to exclude the evils of absolute consolidation as well as of the mere confederacy. What he's talking about is he's talking about the sanctity of the Senate and its responsibility to the states. And the fact that the Senate is not elected by the general body, but the legislatures of the states. This one thing, and this is this is probably the best precursor that we can use to getting into why we need to talk about the Senate and the rescinding of the 17th Amendment instead of the repealing. So let me now dive into these last few minutes of the G. Edward Griffin. So yesterday, as we were getting off the air, I read this, the expropriation of lands without compensation to farmers and so forth. If you understand how slavery ended, there was reparations paid in England, and those reparations were paid to the slave owners. I forget how many pounds they were given, British pounds, they were given for each slave that was taken from them via the emancipation so that they were free. And what England had done by doing this was they injected money into the hands of those who had work but lost their slaves, or those who lost their indentured servitude, their servants, their labor force. Let's put it as labor force. And what it allowed them to do was it allowed them to instantly say, hey, you know, you no longer have to work for me, but if you're willing to work for me, I'd be willing to pay you this much to do this job. And what it did was, instead of creating this huge vacuum of a lot of people without work and a lot of people without a place to go or anything else, it gave people the needed capital to switch from a slave labor force to a free labor force, to where people could move back and forth and negotiate. And if you look at the outcome of slavery in Britain compared to South Africa, and in contrast to America, which was better? In America, people laid their lives down, and half a million people died to emancipate all men, or more specifically, all slaves in America. The cost of life was great in freeing slavery here in America. You can't tell me that it was just, you know, like a flip of a switch. One day, you know, you were a slave, and then at 12 o'clock that day, everybody was free. It wasn't like that at all. However, in South Africa, that's exactly how it was. Because in South Africa, the king edicted that they would stop slavery in South Africa, and they stopped practicing it. So all of a sudden, they had a huge switch. Now, what didn't happen in South Africa is the king did not pay reparations to the slave owners so that they could quickly convert from a slave labor force to a paid labor force. In America, we had lots of people die. We had lots of, you know, labor that was now gone, because all those people that died, most of them, you know, were workers. They were farmers. They had families. They had things to do instead of just fighting that war and emancipating people. And so what ended up happening was, even though there was a huge vacuum for labor, what ended up happening was the beginning of communism, because this is where the Reconstruction period took over and the federal government unconstitutionally started spending money. One of the things that Frederick Douglass basically pounded on is just let them alone. Let them go and do what they want to do for themselves. What ended up happening for about 10 years is people waited around for the next handout to come. Oh, we're going to get something, some help here. We're going to get help here. And it created, I believe it set the stage to allow for things like the Crow laws and other segregation laws to get organized so that they had means and ways of continuing some level of oppression, whether it be through racism and so forth. And the Democratic Party was the origins of all of this. The Democratic Party from Andrew Jackson and Martin Van Buren all the way through. And if you go to blackisright.com and or blackandblondemedia.com, you will find a really good history line. And I think I should probably go through that again one of these days to kind of talk about. Now, there are some issues I think I've talked about before that I don't necessarily agree with some of the facts or information. But for the most part, it actually provides clarity that the party of racism has been the Democratic Party historically from the beginning even till today. And so you can't deny the facts, my friends, when you start really looking at the facts. So with that, when we come back in our next episode, we're going to talk about a few different things. So what we'll try to do for next week is we're going to talk about the rescission of the 17th Amendment. We're going to bring up Madison's property. And we're also going to dive into, what was that other one? There was this other thing. Oh, yes, American republicanism. This whole concept of bicameral legislative bodies and representation for sub-elements of government instead of just representations of the people. So with that, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we do need your help. God bless, and we'll be back. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.